No, that's a good theory that I'm going to save for the end
I was more the whole time. Oh, wait. Is that the theory?
It was me the whole
okay,
time.
All right.
The magic
okay,
inside
right.
of us is the real magic. The little
the magic
well, it's like magic, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Okay. Quiet, everyone. Everyone, quiet on the set. We're starting.
Oi, magic, right? It's like when you look at something and then it turns to something else, right? Like you're on the lift. It's called a lift because it lifts you up, isn't it? But all right, I'm done. I promise.
Please don't be done.
Okay,
they're
right.
called crisp because they're crispy, isn't it?
one more moment. All right, okay. Everyone who would like to get their Alan Moore impression out, I'm going to give everyone a solid minute and a half to say as
that's
much.
That's way
as you want.
Too long.
That's the max you're going to get. So, on the count of three, everyone, get it out of your systems. One, two. Three.
Hey, everybody. My name's Billy Corgan. You're listening to Smashing Pumpkins. We're going to be doing some magic here. Yeah.
What is this opposition of my disorder bullshit? You want me to
right.
do the Alan Moore voice.
So,
I'm not doing
right.
it.
Whoa. You know, the secret of magic is the woe is a vampire.
My name is the world.
My name is Alan Moore. No one does a Steve Moore impression, though.
Nobody
I just thought about
Steve
that. He wrote
my
the...
name is Steve Moore.
Oh, I'm Steve Moore. I am.
We're not related.
My brother wrote Promethea, and he's a little bit
call
of a dick.
Manchester, because a man hated it.
Hello, my name is Steve
All right.
Moore.
I'll sweep your chimney. I will.
Mary Poppins.
Oh, all
right,
he's
great.
A
that is
a bit of the ultraviolet. He is.
Are you recording
that's
now?
That is like the.
Oh, we've been recording.
That's the mad. That's
oh, okay,
like the
good.
Mad
oh,
it's menagerie
a jolly
of
holiday with Dr. Manhattan.
This was what I wanted. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
They said they were making a sequel to Watchmen, and I cried. Dave Gibbons, call me.
I invite you to watch Watchmen 3.
Well, when I was watching,
if you feel
these comic books can't get it up.
That's a whole statement.
I invite you to watch my movie, 5 for Vendetta.
I just want you to know that the carpet matches the drapes.
Yep. If you feel possessed to watch the Legion of Extraordinary Gentlemen's movie, I instead invite you to come to my residence, where I will jab a sharp object in your eye, and you will find to be a more enlivening experience. There you go.
All right.
I think everybody's got it out of their system.
That's actually...
hey,
yeah, that was...
we've all suitably mocked Alan Moore's body of work.
All right, next, Neil Gaiman.
Oh.
Hello, everybody. My name's Neil.
Well, this is a much easier podcast to do.
Same Cockney, same.
My
like,
name is Neil Gaiman.
The first aeon, I was the Great Spirit. In the second aeon, men knew me as the Horned God, Pan Genitor, Pan Phage. In the third aeon, I was the Dark One, the Devil. In the fourth aeon, men knew me not, for I am the Hidden One. In the fifth aeon, I appear before you as Baphomet, the God before all gods, who shall endure to the end of the earth. In this new aeon, I appear to you as... C.M.N.
Imagine that there is a brilliant white light just above.
Is commentary on the magic art.
In the year of the primal force, in the dawn of terrestrial birth.
Oh, that was very educational.
Now magic will take place. Don't be fooled by what I just said.
Welcome, welcome, everyone.
I am Steve Moore Kennedy, and this is Chaos Magic News, existing in the idea space with all of the imaginal creatures of the world. Oh, look, a unicorn. Isn't that lovely? Joining me, as always, is my rock hard co-host, Girth Ennis. How you doing, Girth?
No relation. So this week we have a really special treat for you. Originally, we had planned on doing this as the culture piece to a regular episode, but we ended up going on so long and having such a good time that we decided to make this the entire episode.
It's just a big round table roundup with six goofy guys talking about their love of all things magic, comic booky, British. Am I missing anything?
Impressions. We do a lot of those.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's just buckle up, and it's, you know, it's not quite a special, but it's, you know, it's just us going in on this book and telling you, I mean, really just why we loved it. Right. I mean, we had very few negative things to say about it.
Yeah. I had a probably more negative things that I could have said, but I just let them play out because
I could have been
no one
worse.
Wants to hear me rant for another hour and a half about why representationalism is bad.
I mean, but even that aside, it's still just a lovely book. Like, we normally save the shilling for our own stuff, but honestly, if you haven't gotten the let me get the title proper, The Moon and Serpent Bumper Book of Magic by Alan Moore and Steve Moore. If you haven't gotten that yet, I mean, maybe hold out till Christmas or tell your friends and family that you can't wait for Christmas and you need it now. But that can be your Christmas gift. Maybe lie and just say it's your birthday.
Yeah, it's a great, great little thing that's come into the world. And it was a real good time to talk about it. We got to talk a lot about not only Moore's specific ideas on magic, but just how much we appreciate the art and our own feelings towards this as a cultural piece, given how much of a presence it's held in that little niche of the occult world that all of us seem to occupy.
All right. With all of that said, before we take you to the roundtable itself, we'll give you an ever so brief rundown if you have no idea who the hell either of these guys are. First off, we've got Alan Moore, famed comic book writer, wrote Watchmen, wrote V for Vendetta, wrote League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, wrote Promethea, which was an explicitly magical working, also performance artist, visual artist, and at
novelist.
40, novelist, yeah, you're right. And at 40, he declared himself a magician and went about trying to figure out what that meant. The thing about Alan Moore is that he says at 40, but when you hear him talk, he kind of was always on the fringes of occult and fringe thinking. He was always fond of psychedelics, and those things always run together a little bit. I think my real take is that I think at 40 he said that and he got maybe a little more earnest about going about it, but I think it was kind of always there, because it was always there for Steve Moore, no relation, who, again, another comic writer, novelist, just not nearly as well known as Alan Moore, but he's good. And, you know, I honestly wish I had given him a better shake looking at like his actual books and stuff. But every time I've come across him, I've enjoyed him. I know he actually has some very notable scholarly pursuits related to like Eastern spirituality, like the I Ching. He did like a complete overhaul of that. And that's really good stuff just on its own. That's enough that you could, you know, we could be like, hey, well, he did all this. But the two of them together, these two were magical brothers in arms. Alan Moore talks about an experience they both had where essentially them being on psychedelics and having the same trip. And then, you know, trying to do Enochian magic together and stuff like that. So these two, not only did they influence each other writing in their creative pursuits, but they also, both of them kind of discovered what being a 21st century magician meant together. And that's really something. You know, we should all be so lucky.
Definitely.
And well, and then the last thing is Steve Moore is no longer with us. He passed away. I think we even say it in the show, but he passed away back in 2014. And this book had already been underway well back before then. So this is his final release. It's really good that this thing did finally come to fruition for a lot of reasons, but possibly most importantly, because it really does give those two a time to shine and show their unique brand of, I don't know what you call it, like art occultism.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. We didn't get to break down too deeply Alan Moore and Steve Moore's ideas on how magic works beyond some sort of rudimentary explanations of things. But it is a fascinating system that has a lot of crossover with earlier magical thinkers with a new sort of modern and very art and creativity influenced bent to it.
I think I could sum it up in a really, maybe a tight little bow if I'm lucky. Magic is the realm of idea space, of the mind. And that means that the bedrock for magic is what William Blake thought. You know, it's the imagination. It is the image-making faculty is how we know the divine. And once you accept that ideas, even though you can't grab them by the back of the head and drag them around, ideas are very real. And when you learn that we are all immersed in this ever-present idea world, that's when the notions of art and creativity and inner processes or invisible processes, the not readily knocked against a table processes, are not only always there, but they connect all of us. So magic is the means by which we interact with that ever-present field of ideas. Feel pretty good? You like that?
Yeah, I like that a lot, in fact.
So that just because something isn't real in the way that the microphone that I'm staring at is real, it can have an impact, and not just on physical things, it can have an impact as phenomena to be experienced.
Right, and more suggest that most of these sorts of idea space entities, forces, whatever you want to use, all of these, this idea space can be accessed through the creative process and the act of making art and representation.
Well, with that, do we want to take them to the round table already in progress?
I think we will.
Welcome back, everyone, to CMN. As always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, whose name I said at the beginning of the episode, but we're doing this before that. This is how time works. It's kind of a linear thing. But the point is, we're joined by our wonderful panel of guests here to talk about, what are we talking about?
We are talking about The Moon and Serpent Bumper Book of Magic by esteemed British comic creators Alan Moore and Steve Moore. Actually, just calling them comic creators isn't accurate either. I mean, these were writers. Both of them did novels and short stories, and were also both practicing magicians. Steve Moore, I believe, is no longer with us.
Yes, Steve Moore passed several years ago.
But this was a book that was in the works for quite a while.
Almost as long as I've known about Alan Moore being an occultist, this book has been talked about.
Rather than getting too much into the details of like how the book came about and everything, I think it suffices to say that, and Alan Moore's book has talked about this extensively, notably with the essay that turned into an audio experience called Unearthing, or you can hear it on YouTube as a lecture called My Mate Steve, just talking about the unique brand of magic that Alan Moore has found through his works, particularly his creative efforts, that mostly stem from when he turned 40 and just decided that he was going to be a magician, which is a great age for it, I guess. But him and Steve were always slightly on the fringes of a cult. Stephen Moore has a thing where he essentially had a longstanding relationship with a moon goddess through a combination of like tulpa mancy, which is like, I understand that Westerners' understanding of tulpas are bunk, and like what we think of, oh, you just think of a thing like really hard and eventually other people can see it. Like it ain't like that. But he had this thing where he would do all this sort of energetic and visualization work with this moon goddess, and she sort of took form. And cut all this. This is way too long. But the point is that both of them were occultists that essentially equated the creative process to the magical work. And that isn't unheard of, especially with another UK-based comic creator. They diverge and crisscross in some interesting ways that we might get into a moment. But this book came out, what, October 15th?
Yeah, something like that.
And it is currently the 18th, 19th?
19th, yeah. So it's only been out for a couple days. You can go find the early reviews and so on if you would like. But given that we're a regular working class schmucks that had to buy our own copy because Alan didn't want to give us a copy to preview, you know,
probably because of all the things we said at the beginning.
No, probably because he doesn't know who we are.
No, he obviously does, because otherwise how would he hear
all about magic?
How would he hear all the things we said? Yeah, like that.
Alan, where are you?
I heard the things you said about me.
Always watching, God. Always listening.
We gave you the time. Stop doing it. We're moving on.
But the important thing is that rather than two yahoos that mostly agree with each other on everything, and then Gary, who did not, you didn't get a copy, did you?
Dude, I fucking picked up the wrong book. I started listening to the Alan Whitman. Who's the guy that died? That was Snape that killed.
Oh, you bought the Alan Rickman book.
Yeah.
A common mistake.
So anyway, so I'm going to be no help in this episode, believe it or not. Usually I know I'm so on my fucking game.
Yeah, normally you're the high magus in these discussions, but I guess we're going to have to make do with that. Whoever else is here.
Schmucks, I guess. No, I'm just kidding. You guys are wonderful. I love you all.
They're all being so well behaved. Like they're just dead silent. Like it's okay.
Well, that's what they're normally used to. They're like, oh, they're talking. I can't talk back. Oh no, wait, they're actually here on the other end of the mic this time.
They can't hear me. Like
everyone's just on their shit. Like everyone else is just doing their like regular routine stuff, like as they would listen to a podcast, but their mics are open. I love the idea of that. Yeah. It's just people. Right, like,
We've got Local with us again.
Local, how are you?
Hey, y'all. I'm good. How y'all?
Hey, Local.
Local, I have to call you out on something because you immediately go with like the pretense of the Southern accent. What is your theory on linguistics you told me earlier? You said you were just trying to describe like, oh, you can do an Alan Moore voice, but it's like doing like a Southern accent, but like way slowed down.
Yeah, Alan Moore, he is like this. Hello, y'all. Welcome to the South.
It's like not even wrong either. It's like exactly
okay,
correct.
I don't. Now, I'm not going to say where you are, but you're in the South. So my question is, how do you get that so wrong?
Okay, wow. What? All right. Yes, and I guess as in a fucking... Okay. You're right. Yeah. No, you're right. He's wrong.
How do you get it wrong?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Co-host.
I'm just saying...
Your mom's fat.
Like when you... You're like, you're y'all even. It sounds like you're doing a bit at us. It sounds like you're fucking with... It's like, hey, y'all, wink, wink, I'm from the South. Trademark.
Oh yeah, I've never done a bit. Hello, Winnebore, never done a bit.
I feel like Logan was actually just about to be like, also, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah, it's like,
fuck you. This is how I talk.
All right. Well, we've offended one guest we've had, so let's see if we can do the next one. Coco, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm afraid to speak.
Says exactly the same thing Logan said.
Would you like us to say something horrible about a member of your family, perhaps, or your accent?
I mean, I don't have an accent. I have the proper way of speaking.
Ah, Midwesterner, I see.
No notes.
Can you say John for me, though?
John.
There it is.
Just sitting down to a pile of cement with like grated asphalt on it and just saying, yep, our state really knows pizza.
I did not know.
It doesn't even say which state it is.
You don't have to.
You have been talking shit on Pennsylvania pizza for the entire time I've been in here.
It's true. Without fail, I don't think co-host has said a single thing except for
our pizza isn't great. Our cheese sticks are phenomenal.
I would agree with that. I would agree. Well, your cheese sticks are phenomenal. I haven't had
Philadelphia pizza, but I do own Wonder Bread and Cheese Whiz. So I figure I got a ketchup packet in the kitchen too. So
wait, Pennsylvania has pizza?
You're like, I've never had Philadelphia cheese pizza, but I have had a Lunchable. So I think I'm on the same path.
I think I got a step up, really.
And unfortunately, joining us for the very first time, we have Seos93. Seos, how are you?
Seos.
Hello.
Oh, no, we have the actual Alan.
Unfortunately, though, I am out on the west coast of the country, so everything is totally tubular over here.
Ew. that was
Hi.
I got a little repulsed by that. Seos, I'm not gonna lie to you, Seos.
Yes?
Seos has been in the Discord for a while. Actually, I think Seos is one of those people that we have name dropped specifically, like saying, oh, and then Seos asked this or, you know, did that. And I mean, if you listen to the Patreon supporters, Seos has been in there pretty much since we started. He's a really cool cat. That's all I can say about him.
I say a lot of nonsense. Yes, yes.
But the next time you're on here, I'm going to have to just dig into you. I think that's the format we're establishing here.
Oh, yeah. The first time you're on, you're a guest. The second time, you're a target.
Excellent.
The third time.
All
right, you're a victim.
So let's hear all of Seos's wonderful opinions, and then we can get to these two schleps.
Well, okay. The first reason why Donald Trump is great is sorry.
No, you're in the inserting the clip of you are the chosen one.
You are the one to surpass us. You are the one.
Oh boy. All right. So, all right. Maybe we should go with who's had their book the longest, because I literally got my copy yesterday evening. And then what, Coco, you got yours like 2 days ago?
I think it was 3 days ago.
Mine showed up on Tuesday, like the day it came out, I guess.
Kennedy, didn't you say you had a digital delay? Whatever the fuck that means.
Kennedy still does not have his fucking copy.
Wait a minute. Hold on. We're not going to sit on this.
Can order an ebook? Like,
but that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah, I think he did order an ebook.
He doesn't have it.
How do you delay an ebook?
It's not ready.
I don't understand.
That is the funniest thing I've ever heard. That's not a delay, Kennedy. What that is a grift. You got fucking scammed. Someone took
your
money and ran.
I shouldn't have bought my ebook from that guy on the street corner. I gave that guy $5.
He was just wearing a shirt that said Kindle on it. I thought he was legit.
Oh, I thought it was his name.
Yeah, what's up, Kindle? That's my plug.
He matched your ebook up with some fentanyl.
That's what it is. It's a digital product laced with fentanyl. So it's it's getting...
Hell yeah, it is.
That's called a hang 10 on the West Coast.
Seos, can you confirm?
It's called an NFT.
You know what? Also, Seos is on the West Coast, so he got his earlier.
Yes, that's no. why. 3 yeah, hours later.
That's how time zones work.
No, the planet turns the other
that's
way.
Oh. Superman became a paraplegic. No, yep. That's not true.
What?
You fucking heard me. The time stands still when baby's in a wheelchair.
There's so much to unpack there, and we do not have the time. Moving on.
Zeos has the time because he's 3 hours ahead of us.
Hey.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, well, we will actually go with Zeos first. Zeos, first impressions, like right off the rip, when you pop this out of the box, when you said, suspicious lack of fentanyl, but let me see what is in it. What were you thinking? Like, what were your thoughts?
Well, after being, you know, disappointed about the lack of fent, checking it between every page, looking for a little baggie or something of it, I was, you know, like, the way it looks and everything, like, all the pages, you know, it's all fully illustrated. I've been waiting on this book since probably it was announced, like, 2007, 2008. There was a lot of stuff when it was originally announced that they were planning on with the book, like pop-up pages and weird shit like that and everything, and it doesn't have any of that, but still though, like, the way it's laid out and all the pages and the colors and everything, it is definitely something that'll catch your eye on a shelf or something. I love the way it looks.
The one thing I will chime in there is that almost in the same vein, when I heard about this book, it was one of those, oh, that's cool. And then seeing how far away we were from its original announcement, I just assumed, I ain't no way this is ever coming out.
Yeah.
And the fact that we've got a somewhat diminished version compared to the original ideas is like, that's a, you know, you can always compare it from what could have been, but the book is still gorgeous. Every page, there is something that is going to catch your attention of like, oh, that's cool. Or, oh, hey, I recognize that, you know, that sort of thing. How far did you get in the whole book?
Like,
did you break down and just look at different sections, or did you start at the intro and just read as far as you got?
I started out just reading it from the first page and probably got like 40 something pages in. But after a while, I realized I was going to be on here and should probably know a bit more than that. So then I just started jumping to, you know, different, because it's broken down into kind of, sort of like 4 or 5 sections, and if you look at the table of contents, and I just started moving around there, like looking at the different things to do on a rainy day sections, which are like little like spells and things you could try. There's sections on like the great enchanters, all the little comic strip pages, like talking about like different magicians and stuff throughout history. So yeah, like I tried to get a little bit of like every section of book before today. So yeah, I went through all together. I don't know, maybe a third of it.
Nice.
Real quick, everybody else, like how far did we get? Because I kind of did more or less the same thing. I got to the end of the very first rainy day section and I was like, okay, this is, I'm not making headway here. Let me look and see what's really in the, and I went through the section where it shows all the spheres of the Kabbalah, and then it throws in like the astral realm. I leafed through some of that. I looked at some of the shorter comics. What everybody else, Kennedy, you got what?
I got to look at it for an hour, maybe.
Yeah, so
about that. I read.
So that table
I did.
Of
I literally did that.
Pretty cool, right?
That table of contents is very informative. No, but I got to read the intro, but I also got to read most of the intro already because the guys were kind enough to send me photos, and I was like, that was the first thing I saw, so I wanted to read through it. And I, like I said, I basically just skimmed through the rest of it, reading highlights. And that's probably going to color my overall impression of it. But here's the thing. And I wonder, because Zeos already mentioned that they were, you know, waiting around for this to come out since it's been announced, as have I, as have you.
Oh, I didn't think it was ever going to come out.
Well,
like,
right. Well,
I,
yeah.
I really,
but you know,
resigned
what I mean?
To myself, like, nah, this ain't happening.
Zeos, has it lived up to the hype in your mind?
Not 100%. But, you know, I mean, I do think it's great, and I'm eventually going to read all the way through it, but I don't necessarily think it has to do with, like, the lack of hype. I don't think it necessarily has to do with it, like, not coming with, like I said, like, the pop-up book pages or, like, the tarot deck they said that was going to come with it. I think if I do have anything, any sort of problem with it, It's the fact that it is definitely for beginners. That's why I did skip some sections of it. It's like, I really don't need to be reading a whole other section about, like, this is all what all the Sephiroth are.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, you know, what you do with your magical weapons and stuff. I mean, that's great. And, you know, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with making a book about that, of course, but that is kind of one of the things that comes from somebody who's never written a specifically like magic book or grimoire or something. Their first one is just always that same stuff that if you've been familiar with this stuff for a while, you already know. So I was actually kind of skipping around to some of like the other parts of it and not like the nuts and bolts stuff, because like I said, already sort of familiar, don't need to read that again.
Right. I'm going to hold my own thoughts for a little bit on it, because I have a lot to say that's going to be sort of probably on the negative end of it. And it's not because I like, you know, again, oh God, the guy who got to read it for like an hour wants to say bad things about it. Oh my God. But I'll let everyone else get their thoughts in there. But I'll say I shared a lot of that sentiment.
Let's jump to local real quick. Local, we're going to assume, because I think you also got yours the same day that it came out. So we're going to jump to you. Say, so first impressions, what were your thoughts as you cracked this open and started leafing through it?
Well, I'm really only through the first section right now. But one of the things that I noticed is that it kind of like deep end of the pools, everyone. I mean, every other magic book that I've read, like Liber Null, hey, okay, spend 6 months learning to meditate. But this book is like the second chapter, like, okay, all right, here's how to make magical implements, y'all.
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah, like it's built for people that have already like know a little bit about magic and woo-woo. Like you can kind of pick up this book and go.
Almost like it's masquerading as a beginner's book.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, and I think to me, because I did notice it's a different approach, because like the first exercise, as far as like the intro itself is trying to sort of sell you on the ideas that more and more have about magic, which essentially amounts to magic is the domain of a sort of collective idea space that we all occupy, whether we're really aware of it or not. Like there's the physical table that I'm kicking with my leg right now, but there's a whole host of sort of mental associations that exist, that it's like they're not a physical object, but they're just as in existence as everything else. And that what the two Moors seem to speculate is that it's not just that the idea of a table is in my head, it's somewhere out here in this psychic field that not only can I enter that space where there's the idea of a table, but I can reach out and realize that we're all occupying this same space of, oh, we all exist in this world where we can all tap into the idea of the table. And it's the same idea that we're in contact with. It's not like we're all just walking around with our own. It's not just that we're all occupying a world of ideas. It's we're all occupying a connected world of ideas. So that's what the intro starts with. And then like the first exercise is how to make an image of God, and then how to make your magical implements, which seems like something that, oh man, that is kind of deep end. But when you approach it the way that the Moors are approaching it, where the idea is learning to interact with this idea space, particularly through the creative process, it makes sense that the first thing they're going to say is, hey, start making stuff, start creating, because that's, you know, sitting there and meditating is going to be good for making you focused. You know, the corporate world knows that. It's like, hey, 15 minutes a day makes you less likely to grab a shotgun and blow away everybody in the office. Or, you know, or on a better bend, it's like it can make you
better make it 20,
but it can make you a more productive, worker, blah, blah, blah. But very few workplaces are going to be like, hey, you should tap into the idea of God. You should tap into the ability that man has to reach the divine through their creative faculties.
It's like, get rid of the spreadsheets and spread those arms for Christ.
All right. But so to me, it is weird because, like, you're right. That is, if somebody was like, hey, what's the first thing? Go make your magic sword, nerd. Psh, psh. You know, that's pretty up there. But if you're somebody who thinks like, how do you know magic? And it's like, well, magic is about finding the ideas that you can pull down and make manifest in the world. So yeah, go make your magic sword, nerd. Psh,
psh. Hell yeah.
Have you flipped through any of the other stuff? Have you looked at any of the like the little comics and things? Can we talk about the amazing comic that's like right at the front of the book, where the dude draws the deer on the side?
Oh, the with the cave painting, yeah,
the dancing sorcerer thing.
Yes, yeah, that I feel like in the same way that a great work, agreeing with the Moors here, a great artistic work can operate like a spell. I feel like that was the induction, like that, like you look at that and it's like, oh shit. Oh, I'm so down.
One thing about that one in particular, and that's a good starting point, but really going through all the whole, like, all the different comics with, like, the lives of the great enchanters and stuff. One thing that, I mean, aside from just learning new stuff about, you know, people, that's all well and good and neat. But I do think it's, especially starting back in, like, with the caveman stuff that you were saying, it sort of gives you an idea of, like, kind of, you know, like this lineage, maybe not directly, but sort of, that you as a chaos magician or a modern person or whatever are kind of connected with. So I think that, like, by reading all that stuff, it's, I don't know, it kind of, I think it sort of pumps you up to, like, want to start doing stuff, because it makes you feel like, oh, like, sort of part of, like, this whole grand thousands of year old tradition and stuff. So aside from just, like, learning the neat stuff out of those comics, I think that that is what that section of the book is, like, really good at, sort of connecting you to, like, all of those people and that stuff.
I think that's a really great assertion, like a way of almost showing you in the idea that, like, I don't know if Crowley said it or if this is something that I think Crowley said or if this is something we just started saying, but the idea of magic is the birthright of all people. And it connects you to this idea of, like, this is pre-written language. This is pre-recorded history. This is pre-civilization. Man was engaged in the creative act that transformed the world that we call magic. And by you engaging in it, you aren't aping some tradition. You're not stealing from the Golden Dawn. You didn't take the grade A documents from the OTO for your own narrow-minded purposes. You're not breaking into some closed practice. You're finding the thing that every human being has had laying at their feet the entire time, whether they knew it was there or not. And that's really, that sounds really high-minded for something that has like a cutout and build your own little paper temple in the back. It really, in a if you wanted to make someone feel good about doing magic or about the idea, having them come at it from that point of view of like, this has been with us forever, is a really great way of doing it.
Coco, what about you? What were your first thoughts on it so far? I know you've gone through a good chunk of it, skimming through like the rest of us, right?
I have, and I'm going to try to mount a slight defense of this book, because I kind of see what he was trying to do. Because I agree with you guys that, like, it isn't a good beginner's book because it presupposes a good amount of knowledge. I mean, it's Alan Moore, I'm kind of not surprised. But it also doesn't work well for people in a middle or later part of an occult practice, because it is, at its core, basically a beginner's book. So taking it as an instructional manual, I don't think it works at all, in the slightest bit. Now, if you look at it as a work of art, basically as a love letter to magic itself, that's where I think this book shines.
I think some of that's even predominantly there with the choices there.
Yeah, I really get
I think
that.
That's like mostly what he was trying to do, is he was trying to be like, I love these things, I love these stories, and like, he's having fun telling, well, both of them, they're having fun telling the story of, you know, how the tarot was founded and how it works, and they're having fun like going through the lives of all these magicians and stuff, and even the original story that runs throughout it about the woman discovering herself through magic, which again, I haven't read all of, so I'm not going to pretend to know all of that story, but based around the, I think, three chapters I read of that. Yeah, I got three chapters in. That's basically like the gist of what's going on with that story. I enjoy it a lot. I think it's really good, and I've been enjoying going through it. Now, again, like I said, having said that, there's nothing you can't get from other books in here.
The one thing that you can get from this that other books don't have is Alan Moore's specific view on magic. And I think that is, I think your assessment is really fucking on point. That is kind of, that it almost sums up everything that I wanted to say about it. The only thing that I feel is a wholly original, and it's not even wholly original, but is an original contribution to magic and occultism in theory and practice, is Alan Moore's specific view on what magic is.
Agreed.
My only problem with that is I hate it.
Oh, boy.
I fucking hate Alan Moore's views of magic, y'all. I fucking can't stand
it. But it's magic, isn't it?
It does say, like, very specifically on page 275, the most useful definition of magic, as he says, is the purposeful engagement with the possibilities and phenomena of consciousness, is his idea of it, I suppose.
I've never heard somebody jerk off with words like that before.
Wow, you haven't read a Crowley book.
Pretty hot.
That, oh, man, that is literally what it says. Also, there is a minotaur, two minotaurs on page 274, which is
concerning.
Interesting.
Okay, but in that intro comic that you love so much, co-host, there's a specific phrase that Moore uses talking about what human beings are.
Well, the very first one is wordless except for one weird cryptic symbol. If you're referring to, well, now I'm being pedantic, aren't I? Sorry. But it's that yeah, you're talking about... Oh, representation alone. No, never mind. I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Representation alone distinguished humans from other animals, allowing access to a conceptual world where all phenomena, including mind itself, inevitably seemed magical.
Now, isn't that cute?
But it's wrong!
How far back did you have to go for that?
Okay, but in all seriousness, like,
leaned all the way back in his chair and cupped his mouth. So, like, awesome. He was.
I'm not going to play the game where I sit here and tell everyone how smart I am for disagreeing with that idea or anything, but
look how smart I am for disagreeing with folks.
But I think that is overall my chief problem with the book is simply that Moore and I have a complete disagreement on what magic is, even from like my coyote pragmatist sort of viewpoint. Like, I just don't agree with that idea. I don't think that representation is what separates us from other animals, and I don't think it's key to magic.
What separates us from animals then?
I think it's clothing.
The only thing separating me from the animals is that little bar that you put on the conveyor belt when you're checking out your groceries, because they will just, in my neighborhood, they will just snatch that shit. This is mine now. No, they scanned it and put it into my bag. It's mine.
Sneaking gums and mints and shit into your line, and then all of a sudden you're paying for someone's other fucking habits. You know what I mean?
I'm buying I'm buying your fentanyl packet.
Now I'm getting your fucking drugs for you at your convenience store.
Now I'm buying perks off Buddha.
Buddha ate the perk.
Again, I've only gotten to read the book for about an hour or so.
But here's the caveat to that, too, though. As we were already saying, this isn't anything new. Like, not just like, oh, this isn't anything new or groundbreaking as far as magic. But this isn't anything new if you did listen to, if you listened to the, or watched the Mindscapes of Alan Moore, or listened to Unearthing, or him talking, you know, My Mate Steve, those sort of things. He has laid out, Alan Moore has laid out what he thought about magic for decades now, you know?
Right.
Do we remember, I think everybody has that fucking quote probably burned into their brain where it's, I think art and magic, you know, are the same thing. You know, to cast a spell is to spell, that sort of, you know, that shit.
Which is just a quick note. When Alan Moore says it, everyone thinks it's amazing. But when the guy on YouTube is like, "Your bullshit number two pencil. See, it's number two because you write with it in school and they teach you bullshit." We go, that guy needs to be on.
But he doesn't have a long beard and dark voice.
Yeah,
that's true.
True fact.
Very true. Everything sounds more credible when you have a very deep voice and a very long beard. And that's why no one takes me seriously.
Wait, I have a very long beard.
And we're waiting on your every word.
Please tell us.
I got the long beard, but not the deep voice.
Oh, man. It's your podcast now. The point that I was making is that if you have listened to any of what Alan Moore has said about magic already, you know what this book is going to tell you. And there's nothing wrong with that, as we've said. Like, this is, in a weird way, it is it's a book for adults masquerading as a children's book. It's also a book that's arguably, depending on where you land on it, it could be considered a book for people that already know about the occult, coming at it like they don't know anything. And also, it's almost for people that already know what it's going to say. You're just enjoying the ride. And I was the first person to bitch and moan about, like, oh man, there are always so many beginner books. But if you wanted a beginner's book on magic that was going to tell you baby's first bullshit and you wanted to get a ride out of it, it's this book. Because just like, you know, I really agree with Coco's assessment of this is a love letter, not just to the ideas of magic in general, but to the ideas of the history of occultism, the history of these fringe thought, and a love letter to fellow artists. Because, like, I was flipping through this and I landed on the page where it's talking about William S. Burroughs. And it's like, shit, of course Burroughs is in this.
Well, oh, that's one thing I wanted to point out. Oh God, what's his fucking name? Because don't make me look like a punk in front of the listeners. It's Ian something, the psychogeography guy.
Ian Chong?
Ian McKay?
Ian Sinclair.
That guy.
That guy.
Ian Ziering from 90210.
But if you look at the people that get included in the history of the Enchanters, you notice they're not all the people that would get included in your typical history of Western occultism. But they are certainly people that would be connected to Alan Moore's particular brand of anarchist from the 70s into the 80s and 90s English world.
Absolutely. These are people. It's almost not just he, because he doesn't just go back to Gurdjieff, and he doesn't just go back to Crowley, and he doesn't just go back to Jack Parsons, but like he goes to people that I think Alan Moore and probably Steve Moore to another extent, because I really don't know how much of each man is in this book, but they're almost picking at people that it's like, it's not just the whole of the Western tradition, but it's the people that they probably feel like are part of their lineage. It's like, these are the guys that got me here. These are the guys that show. And now for the record, I will say Burroughs was spooky woo woo as hell. So like it makes, even if this was just like, where is occultism in the modern sense, you have to go back to Burroughs because Burroughs has an influence on chaos magic and everything else, you know? So, but there is something to be said about it. It is this, like I said, it's not just a love letter of like, oh, ain't magic great. It's really looking at the people that I'm sure laid the foundation for more and more and more.
Oh, I get it.
Ba-bums.
Damn, yep. Dude. Yep. You ballin',
it's
huh?
A pun, isn't it?
Oh, it's big pun.
I don't get it.
I like it.
First impressions and deeper assessments aside, what's everyone's favorite part of it that they've seen so far?
For me, without a doubt, it's the stuff to do on a rainy day. But I think I'm so heavily, heavily biased because all of the art for those sections are by Rick Veitch. And I can't remember if I've complained about Rick Veitch on the podcast yet, but I know I've talked about it in the Discord. This man is like, if we're talking about spooky woo-woo comic people, this is like an unsung unappreciated, like, the dude's amazing. I read Max Immortal, that it's like, hey, it's this story about, like, this Superman analog and all this stuff. And then there's just Don Juan shit going on in it.
Oh, yeah, dude.
It's like, oh, yeah. Wow. And then he has, yeah. And then he's got, like, a brat. And then he wrote something called Abraxas and the Earthman, which is, like, just, there's one of the this alien praying mantis basically spells out, like, yeah, if we get rid of the wall between your left and right hemisphere, you'll awaken to higher consciousness. You'll realize that life is a dream and everything you're dreaming is real. You know, that sort of.
I hope not everything I'm dreaming is real. I don't want to go back to school.
I didn't study for the test. But and then he had in the and then, like, he did this whole thing called, oh, God, I don't remember the name, and it's going to come to me. But basically, where he was doing these little vignette comics of these, of, like, all of these dreams that he had, because he religiously records his dreams. And it's just fascinating to watch somebody making little doodles explaining every weird little dream that they've had for, like, you know, 10, 20, 30 years even.
This is, like, a fantastic art project, though.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But that was just an excuse for me to go on about how cool I think Rick Veitch is. But seeing him right there, and it was like, oh, well, I know what sections I'm reading first. But they are also, I really do enjoy, I feel like more and more as I go on in my occult practice, I'm getting so less and less involved in, like, reading books and, like, studying, like, oh, this came from, I really do just like the idea of telling people to roll up their sleeves and, like, hey, try this, see what happens. And that's what this, and that's what these sections are. And they're done in a way that, even if you are a seasoned occultist, it might make you think twice of, like, you know what? What if I did just drop everything and made, like, a big image, did some big creative image to a god or something like that? Or, like, doing an invocation and saying, like, if you get a grasp of language of how you respond, you won't need to rely on other people's old dusty invocations, because you'll know the right combination of words and symbolic language to use on you that will invoke that feeling. And it's like, man, that is a,
that's
an
wild,
oddly coyote way to go about it. I mean, if you know your psychology and you know your associations, you know what buttons to press if you want to invoke the war god. You know the things that are going to get you in a mood to fuck somebody up way better than anybody else. So rather than using, like, an invocation from over 100 years ago, maybe just push your own buttons. And I think that's really cool. Anybody else got any, like, oh, this was really dope?
Well, to not
repeat, no, the things to the thing, oh, go ahead, Coco.
Okay, Low, you go first.
Oh, I was just gonna agree with co-host that the things to do on a rainy day, like, it's just really amazing. Like, the second chapter, it's breaking down, hey, here's how to make magical implements, here's actually how to, like, focus your will into making magical implements. It was different than any other, I guess, beginner magical book I'd ever read.
Actually, I think that a lot of times they go into two camps of either it's just like, oh, and then go get your magical implements, or, like, you have to find, here are the 47 steps that you need to follow to properly make the wand, otherwise it doesn't count. And this one really gets to the heart of, like, what it is. But no, it gets to the heart of what makes these implements significant. And we're going to do a thing on the magical weapons in a later episode. It's been on the back burner because, like, we want to do it really well. But the idea of why you should make them with your own hands, it's like the idea of making something that is not quite as amazing as if you had hired somebody to forge it out of iron that they got from a meteorite. It's like, it might not be as cool, but when you make something with your own hands and you put all of this personal intent and focus and significance on it, you're going to end up with something that it can't help but be meaningful to you. And I think about, like, some of the crude things that I have created for magical purposes. And I like to think of myself as a halfway decent artist, but that doesn't always, you know, that doesn't always translate. And some people might look at stuff that I made and be like, what kind of, fentanyl overdose were you dealing with when you conjured this thing up? But the things that I've made with my hands that have survived to this point in my magical practice really do hold a lot of significance to me. And they're probably the most important things that I have as far as my practice. To have somebody lay it out like that, be like, man, you could, you know, if you're not good at this, you can find stuff and like just put a, you know, buy something and then decorate it. Do something that is going to put a part of you in this implement. And I think that's a really good approach to it. You know, it's not groundbreaking. It's not anything super new, but to hear somebody lay it out like, no, the important thing is that you are able to put that psychological and spiritual significance on it is what makes it important. There's a section that's literally called seeing things, which, funny, but the idea of like, nah, here's how you go about having these visionary experiences. And that one's just like everything else. It's one of those things that you almost like, you feel like you're gonna, it's like, I know what this thing is going to tell me, but there's just enough there that you think like, that's a decent way of putting it. And I feel like I really am having to eat my words because I made such a big deal about like, oh man, there's so many beginner's books. I should be going like, Alan Moore, you stupid British guy. You should go back to eating beans on toast, But instead, because of the presentation of it, because of the earnestness with it, and because of the love that you can tell went into this, I'm really just sold of like, this is great. Yeah, this is absolutely worth the money. This was worth my money. This was worth my time.
Well, the amount of time they spent on it alone, I mean, is like a good contribution, right?
Absolutely.
Coco, what was your favorite part of it?
Well, other than the wonderful Gennady Tartakovsky primal opening to it, I really like the way that artwork looked and everything like that. I'm just going off of aesthetics, basically, with my whole takeaway from this that is like the main thing I focused on with this. I like the way that the stole bits are done, the long-form story contained within here. I love the way that it's drawn, that like Alphonse Mucha, like 1920s style, Art Nouveau, mm-hmm. I think is absolutely beautiful. And I love the, like, even when you get like later in and you see like all the deities appearing and stuff like that, I just think that artwork is incredible. The Lives of the Great Enchanters thing, information lacking, and sometimes I don't agree with at all in the slightest. But they're drawn really cool, and I like them as an idea to like bounce off of and then go, hey, that sounds interesting. I'm going to learn more about that person.
Oh, is there something in here that you were like, no, this is fucking wrong. What are you talking about?
Yeah, there's a couple of them where I was like, that's not necessarily correct. Or like the Jack Parsons one is abysmal. It's terrible, especially because I see. Can I say something controversial?
Go for it.
I feel like Jack Parsons and Alan Moore, to a degree, both wanted or want, because Alan Moore's still alive, magic to be something that it's not. Jack took that down the opposite route and went like, I'm going to go make my own witchcraft and kind of go a little crazy. And Alan Moore just went, fine, then it's all rational and like, it's all in my head. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't agree with either of you.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. And I think that I feel like I'm talking way too much. I feel like I'm talking over it, but I'll be really quick. I think Alan Moore is very coy with how much he believes in magic in that way that we've talked about making it palatable to people. If I needed to talk about magic to somebody and I knew that they weren't ready for all of the wildness, I can fall back on things like Jungian psychology, and I can fall back on things like meta programming and like the way that we model reality. I can fall back on stuff like that rather than saying what I actually believe, which is like, I don't know, fam. I just do weird. When I do weird shit, I get weird results. So,
baby, you don't understand. We in the Kali Yuga.
This astral plane shit's a little different than what you think it is. You understand?
we're going to have t-shirts ready by the right in time for the holiday season. And look, baby, we're in the Kali Yuga. It's going to be one of them. Shit.
Everyone, KOTs.com.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm remortgaging the house right now to buy them. Genius.
No, but
that's so
but
much.
I can fall back on stuff like that. But my earnest, like the most honest thing I can talk about is terms of what I think about magic is really just that one thing from Libero. Certain actions, certain results, philosophical validity, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares.
See, that's where I fucked up. I should have listened to Crowley because I've been looking for philosophical validity for years
now.
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? I do weird magic stuff and I get weird magic results. Like, I don't need to justify it or rationalize it to anybody. It ain't for you. You're not doing the spooky woo-woo. I'm doing it.
Coco, in defense of Moore, because you managed to defend him a little bit before, I will say that despite I do agree with co-host's assessment that he is trying to make it somewhat palatable to people that would be a little too freaked out if you said stuff like my mind stream has been separated with the Furba by the Scorpion King. You know, you can't say that sort of things to these people. So you have more presentable ideas. But I think Moore is someone that is in a long-standing tradition of idealistic mysticism.
What do you mean by that?
Maybe he's not a Schelling, but he's closer to that than a lot of people. I think that Moore does have what we would call legitimate occult beliefs. I don't think he thinks it's all in your head, man. What I do think, as on a personal level, is that Moore has taken a representational model of the mind that comes down from Cartesianism and ultimately the German idealist tradition at this point. I think he's taken that and he's taken aesthetics and applied it backwards in time to be that, oh, everybody in the world was experiencing art as a sort of creative, imaginative faculty within their own subjective experience. And that's why Moore thinks that art and magic are the same thing. Because Moore decided that what he views as doing art was what the ancient viewed as magic. And I don't think that's right. I think it's closer than it would appear on first glance. But I think ultimately the problem with what Moore is doing is that Moore is taking his ideas of what art is in the contemporary age and applying that backwards in history and saying that these sorts of things that we're doing now and we view as art and magic are what they meant when they said magic, which is just fundamentally false.
Can I pin you down real quick?
And sure.
All right. What you're saying is that Alan Moore is making the critical error of thinking that the world that he is occupying now and his interpretation of art and magic is something that can be applied all the way back.
Yeah, he's making it universal and it goes all the way back, and that's just not
rather than the idea of other previous cultures, blah, 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 had their own conceptions of what these things meant.
Right. And they had their own to pull the Heidegger part and get everyone to drink. I'll say
here's
they
my,
all had their own understanding of being.
Here's my count. Yeah. Heidegger,
drink.
Heidegger was a Nazi.
I just did.
But my counterpoint is that Alan Moore might concede that point to you. He just thinks that he's correct.
Oh, right. That's almost exactly what I'm saying.
That it's not so much that it's like, well, they don't need to agree with me. This is what they were doing.
Right.
They might have partially misunderstood what they were doing, but I understand what they
were doing. Yeah, I get it. Saint Jerome didn't understand that the voice in his head wasn't God, but it was the voice in his head.
Well, the voice in my head is God.
Right.
You tell me Heidegger's a Nazi?
Heidi Klum's a Nazi.
Seos, my friend, what was your favorite part of the book so far?
Well, you know, some of it I'm just kind of assuming because I've only read one part of this section. It kind of goes throughout the book, but Coco kind of touched on it in the art way, at least. But the soul sections through the book, like kind of the sort of old 30s pulp prose kind of story that goes throughout the book. It's from the section I've read so far, it's kind of about like it's in the 20s and it's a lady who's a model for an artist. It's about her weird, creepy, pulpy journey through magic and kind of becoming or interacting at least with like the moon goddess, with Selene and all that. And I've always been a big fan of like that old 30s pulp stuff, you know, Robert E. Howard, Clark Ashton Smith, Lovecraft, all that kind of thing. So that initially kind of got to me.
Uh-huh. Hell yeah, brother.
But also, one thing that I think Alan Moore, and I'll just assume Steve Moore, I'm not really familiar with his solo stuff. One thing I think he is really good at is just his straight up prose. Like, I'm probably the only person on earth who's read Jerusalem twice. So, like, wow. I have
God.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's a span of metal.
Thank you.
I was going to do it, but I needed to get through Stephen King's The Dome a third time, so. Sorry.
But, I was going to do it, but I had a child.
I just needed a long book.
But I only have 20 years left.
Cios, before we completely sidetrack you, yes. I just want to point out one thing in the soul that like I can't stop looking at the illustration until I tell you, but page 144, Dweller in the Abyss, Tree of Darkness, there is what I'm assuming is some type of spell or magical implement nailed into the trunk of a tree. And my brain is just going like, you gotta tell Cios. All right, well, so there you go. But go on with what you were saying. Synchronicities.
Just a little bit, yeah. But what I was trying to get at before I got creeped out by that, thank you, I think one, like I said, in a book that we've all kind of decided a lot of it, like I said, like is for people who are familiar with the stuff, like familiar with all like the Kabbalah and weapons and stuff and everything. One thing that I think Moore is probably better at explaining things through is through his prose. So I'm actually looking more forward to, as I continue to read that section, maybe kind of learn about more of his other ideas and nuances about magic and these subjects, you know, like
through the narrative. Yeah,
well, I'm just saying, like, know the basic stuff that he's writing about, but maybe he has more within the story, more personal ideas and things kind of worked into the prose, like how the story's going. So
right.
I'm really looking more forward to reading more of that part of the book. Maybe you get a little more into the mind of Alan Moore and not just kind of the basic Wikipedia page stuff and some of the other parts of the book.
Right. I'm with you there. This is going to sound odd, I guess, probably again, you know, because I've clarified that I've only gotten to read it now for like 2 hours because I've been able to flip through it a little bit while we were sitting here more. I think the proper way to understand this book is the soul is the main part of this book. You may not realize it, but I think the soul in that story is the meat of what's going to be interesting of this text and maybe even might be the central message of what Moore is trying to get across. The comics, I think, are auxiliary. The, you know, the Lives of the Enchanters is definitely a love letter to the people that influenced him. And I think the Try on a Rainy Day sections are, they're almost there because that's what the book is supposed to be. If that makes sense to me, to anybody, you guys get what I'm saying there?
You have to add that part into it, kind of.
I wholeheartedly disagree. I think that if we are looking at this book as if it is some sort of spell that is supposed to convert people into being magical, right?
Into being filthy Neoplatonists, yes.
then the rainy day sections are literally like the crux. Well, not maybe not the entirety of it, but those sections are, it's almost as if the other sections that are showing like, oh, here's other great enchanters, and here are, you know, here's the story of somebody on their own personal magical journey. Those are supposed to be getting you in this headspace where when you flip to these little blue pages that say, oh, and then you should do this, you're going to do it.
Oh, okay. All right. Everyone else can tell me if they agree or disagree with this assessment, because I just had this thought while once you said that. Maybe we're all reading it correctly, just not fully. Maybe this is the blind man touching the elephant moment, right? What if Moore's intention with this book is that if you are a beginner who has never heard of anything of magic before, this will give you a basic foundation on how to do magic. If you are a seasoned practitioner, someone who knows what the hell they're talking about already, you can enjoy this as an aesthetic art piece, or even, you know, a trip of nostalgia, or maybe the soul narrative piece is going to, as CO said, give a deeper insight into some of the more fascinating and interesting parts of Moore's catalog. And of course, if you're someone that doesn't believe in magic at all, maybe this is something that might get you to shift over that line finally.
If that is an accurate assessment, then we would have to concede that Alan and Stephen Moore, well, I keep saying Stephen, it's Steve Moore. I don't know if he is. He's a Stephen, right? It doesn't matter. Look, more and more attorneys at law.
It's a little bit of lawyering, isn't it?
How do you like me? How do you like me?
Oh, it's a bit of crime, isn't it?
If that is the case, then the only...
Milad, I swear I didn't even do any of that. I wasn't even there.
I never done it. I only said I'd done it so they take me cock out of the bacon slicer.
You gotta believe me, mate.
Oh my God. No, but
if any of you actually know what I'm referring... Oh, I'll kiss every one of you on the mouth. But no,
I think
that is an accurate assessment of what this is. If this really truly is a catch-all book, the idea that this is a book that has quite literally something for everyone at every level, then the only question is, do you think they did it well? And I think everybody here has to say, yeah, they did a pretty fucking bang up job, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I know for a fact that this will be sitting on my coffee table or by the end table at my bed or something like that. And this will be something that even if I'm done reading it, I'm going to flip through and I'm going to look at the art and I'm going to get ideas and I'm going to keep trying to decipher this magical alphabet and try to figure out what exactly all of these little things at the tops of the various pages mean. Because I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but did you know if you look at some of these pages, there's just like the magical alphabet written out, like the glyphs are just lining the top of the page in different orders?
Yeah.
It's in order. If you look at it close enough, you can kind of read. You can read them. It's almost English script.
Oh, for real?
Yes.
It's almost in English, isn't it?
Oh, are you thinking about those things to do on a rainy day where it spells it out?
Yeah. Like at the top of the page.
Man, I'm dumb. Okay. I'm stupid. I thought there was secret code.
Damn it! I thought I was seeing the Matrix code.
I thought I was seeing through the bullshit.
Remember to drink your Ovaltine.
Oh my god.
Man, this is great. This is why we should have all of you on the show more.
Do we just want to do the rest of the episode with them? Come on.
Oh my god, I'm so tempted, but it's gonna take all fucking night. It's 9 o'clock already.
All right. Okay. Well, with that, this segment has been going on for over an hour now. So I'm going to give everyone a chance to give their final thoughts.
You're over an hour, mister.
Gary, what are your final thoughts?
Why are you going to ask? I feel bad for Gary because he hasn't gotten to.
But he has had some of the funniest quips while we were doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
Gary, dude, I'm healing the fuck out of this one, guys. It's fine.
You know what? I'm.
He's getting heat. Let him cook. What?
I'm sending you a copy of that. That's gonna be your Christmas present.
No, the fucking not. You can't you because not. The digital copy comes out in 4 days.
Dude, here's a little secret about this. Here's a little something I'm about to blow your fucking mind with. Are you ready for this, listeners? Are you ready for this panel of wonderful, lovely men with oily chests? Are you guys ready with this?
Yes.
All right. Check this out. I stole this book day one. I've had it.
If anybody was going to be like, I have a copy of this book already in a digital format the day after it came out, it would be you. So, like, I almost believe you. But, counterpoint. Last Christmas, Kennedy gave me a copy of Ontological Graffiti. And just holding that in your hands makes you feel like a fucking magical so-and-so.
Oh, do I get to talk about C.F. Russell telling you that if you collect books, it'll make you a better magician?
Oh, man, I know somebody else who agrees with that.
Real quick, guys, just like for a quick podcast. Second, though. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to be this guy, but we can all agree that was a great and hilarious joke I just did, right? A joke is what I just did.
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, right. Thank you.
Do you think that more and more attorneys at law are going to come for you?
it's a bit of magic, isn't it?
Who published?
Have you been injured in a ritual sacrifice?
I mean, who among us hasn't? But
as Karanzan claimed your mortal soul.
Hey, what? You believe in magic, right? Has some chav ever come up to you and grabbed your bollocks and said, "Hey, this is your bastard"?
You sound like Chad.
Come on, more.
Oh, is anyone? Have you ever been served beans on toast, eh? Call more and more.
Lawyers, and
we want to hear about it.
Just calling them. We want to make up for the horrible breakfast you were served.
What do you hear all about?
I get my Dunlap sound.
I'm smashing his face in, right?
Shut the fuck up.
Okay, all right. Back to final thoughts. Cios, would you like to share your final thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, this...
awesome.
Like I said, I... Yep. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Way to go.
10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Yeah, no, like I said, this is something that I'm probably going to be going through a while. I could see it on my coffee table. I will probably photocopy bits of it out and stick them in the little local libraries at the elementary schools around here. Distribute them to the inner city. Like, yeah, I think they did a bang up job with it myself.
You said that and I just immediately thought, like, man, you know, we're talking about this all as like grown men who... Mm-hmm. Arguably should have better things to do, because this has the pastiche of a children's book, but it never really breaks it either. I'm wrong because I don't know for a fact. It might just be like, hey, you're a dirty motherfucker in like the middle of the book or something like that.
Obviously, but you missed the first page of the Alexander comic where he is just getting effed in the A the entire time. So,
yeah.
Look up that part of the book.
Right.
So,
right.
Kids Monday's should read right. This, is what you're saying. Right. This is Joe Biden's America.
We got to start him young.
The delayed reaction on that one was perfect.
Why do we always go with.
What, with Joe Biden's America?
Please cut in right at this moment the Joe Biden AI voice saying, I was a wizard the whole time. Okay. No, but that's good. I was about to say, like, I wonder how, like, if you showed this to a kid, how they would actually
You
react.
Would go to prison.
You'd probably
you would go to the jail.
It's like, there's a
you,
lot
you would
of,
at least get a really stern talking like, to by somebody.
I'm not saying like walk up on a playground and say, hey, Sonny Jim, and you want to learn some magic? I mean, like, if you had this around your house, and like,
I do love that idea, though. That's hilarious.
You pop up and you want to be the next wizard, Eric? You're 75 copies of the Serpent and Moon Bumper book.
But then, like,
this is really heavy, son. Would you please take one?
What are you buying?
I kid. Want to buy some magic.
You want to buy some magic.
Look, you're immediately going to prison.
Under That's the jail. Awesome. But it's British jail, so it's not nearly as bad.
I don't know about that. by the powers of the pedo finder general. What the fuck was it? Huh? What was it?
No, was it the pedo finder general. Oh, yeah, man. That was it. That was the bit.
Jesus.
By the power vested in me, you by have that been one guy.
I declare you guilty of pedophilia.
Oh, God. Okay.
Of the high pedophilic crime of standing within 50 feet of a child.
Okay. Local, what are your final thoughts on this book?
I think it's cool and good.
Yeah, follow that, Local.
Actually, you know what, Local? I wanted to throw one thing out at you because you mentioned this earlier and we didn't get a chance to talk about it here. You said, I don't take Alan Moore seriously as an occultist.
I don't know if that's quite what he said. I think what he said was,
well, let Alan the man Moore, say no, it. He's right
he
here.
Said, what he said was Alan Moore is like a dirty degenerate.
that is what I said. Yeah.
He said something about like, if Alan Moore,
he did that French thing. He literally went,
but he said like, if Alan Moore,
dirt Santa
he said,
Claus.
If Alan Moore was in front of me, I'd whoop his fucking ass. Right.
Alan Moore, more like Alan Bohr. Also, my name's Local. That's exactly what he said.
I'd give him a knuckle sandwich.
Beat him.
I'd give him a fucking noogie. No, but no, for real. You were talking about how I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you did say that you felt like with Grant Morrison, you said like his works feel like actual spells, while Alan Moore feels like you could look at them as a grimoire, like your stuff to get out of them. But Morrison's work does stuff to you. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I feel like when Moore talks about magic, he talks about it kind of tongue-in-cheek. And that's not to say that he doesn't believe in it, but like, yeah, his books are more talking about magic, where I feel Morrison's books are more doing magic, if that makes sense.
Morrison's works are acts of magic.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than like things about magic.
But you could say one is commentary, one is action kind of thing.
Promethea is a comic book that will teach you about Kabbalah and mysticism. Right. The Invisibles is a comic that will make magic happen in your fucking life.
Yeah, exactly. Like Promethea, read that if you want to learn about the Kabbalah. Read Invisibles if you want to do the Kabbalah.
One is like a travel guide to an area. Another one is like a Sherpa. Where it's like,
That's a good one.
I'm a firm believer that there are that. Works of, and I'll even say that Alan Moore will concede this, that there are works of fiction that create magical change in the reader if they are approached in the right way. I'm not saying every person that read The Invisibles had some kind of magical experience with it that kind of like set them on a path, but I am saying that it bats a much higher average than any other work. I think to that extent, because the Illuminatus trilogy is another example where.
Well, that's exactly like, what I was going to say.
I know Kennedy has. I know I have. I know Local has. And I know Cios has. We've all read those. Coco, have you read it? Have you read the Illuminatus trilogy?
Not all of it. I read the first book and part of the second book.
Well, that is a shame, and we will rectify that if I have to read it to you before you go to bed every night.
We'll rectify it by kicking you off the show right now.
Get out of here.
Okay, no, but right now, that's four people, all right? Did anybody read that and not have it do weird fucking shit in their life?
Oh, I think I've talked about it in the Discord before. Like, if you include audio, because I'm a crazy person, I've gone through that book five times. Rule of fives.
Hail Discordia.
So I had a guy start contacting me about, like, Carrie Thornley and, like, ways he was wrapped up in the company that makes Vampire the Masquerade. Like, he made some of those books, and he just got a hold of me out of nowhere. I don't know who this guy was. And we went down this whole crazy rabbit hole trying to find where Carrie Thornley was at the time, and it was while I was going through the book for the fifth time. And, yeah, so there's other examples, too, but there was... Yeah, weird stuff will definitely happen if you're when you're going through
that. And that is what I would say, is that I, as much as I love Promethea, right? As much as I love all of Alan Moore's works, there's only one thing that I think has done weird shit to me that he has produced, and it's Unearthing. And that weird shit happened in the lead up
to this episode.
With the, yeah, and I'm not going to get into it right now, but like, legit, you know, Promethea didn't do that. The Invisibles did. The Illuminatus trilogy did.
What Alan Moore does with Promethea is far more in line with the chemical wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz than it is something like The Invisibles or The Illuminatus trilogy.
Turns out you can just pronounce names however you want. The face he just made. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
Coco, final thoughts?
Alan Moore, more like Alan, I wish they had done more with it. Seriously.
Hey, I'm Dice.
Hey, remember Dice.
No, seriously. I've enjoyed going through it. I'm going to continue to enjoy going through it. I do really enjoy this book, even if, as aforementioned previously, not necessarily agree with his purview on what magic is. You do have to give him some credit in his, not necessarily pinpointed knowledge, but his vastness of knowledge. He does know a lot about magic and the occult. Yeah, no, like that's just kind of what this comes down to. And actually, something that Sio said, if it wasn't full of, like, tits and guys getting fucked in the ass, it would make a really good coffee book table. Coffee table book.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
no, you're right the first time.
Was he?
Coffee book table. I mean, it is hefty. You probably could build a table out of it. It's not a book I'll be shelving soon.
All right.
Hell yeah.
Finally, dude. Someone managed to get to their own end of the thought before someone decided to, like, oh, I have an entire other 5 minutes of conversation to throw on top of this.
Another 5 minutes of conversation. Oh, man, I got one. Okay. Because we're in the very, okay, page 349, there is useful figures, and it goes from pentagram to hexagram to heptagram to octagram to enneagram. To enneagram again, to tangram, to four-dimensional hypercube, which breaks the gram.
Oh,
but at the very bottom, it says shining trapezohedron. Ask a grown-up before experimenting with this one. And I.
Wait, yeah, hold on.
I
was getting entranced. I think I think this was an actual spell. I think we just witnessed fucking moment.
Bro, do you have any final thoughts to share with the rest of the class?
If you hit somebody with this book, it's probably going to hurt.
It'll make a sound.
Fuck! You'll be such a fucking baby. God damn.
You're committing to the bit, but like, damn, that's my head.
Maybe you should not be in striking distance on the podcast.
Or in life in general.
Just in every general, time you see me,
don't let me hit you.
Just.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
No, I really do think, like, I've already talked way too much, but I think very highly of this book just as the experience of something to leaf through and let it do its work on the back end. Saying experience occultist always makes me feel pretentious, but as somebody who's fucked around with spooky woo-woo for a long time, I know this isn't going to upend my world. I know it's not going to change everything, but if I let it do what it wants to do as a total experience of going through it, I feel like I'm going to have a really good time. And just flipping through and looking at all of the really captivating art and the love that went into this, it's one of those things where I didn't think this book was going to exist. So to get anything out of it, I'm already like, wow,
But to see that it did really turn out so well with so much care put into it, love it. And
heck yeah, man.
As I assume the last work that will ever have Steve Moore's name attached to it, I couldn't imagine a better fitting tribute, you know? And I have once again landed on the Minotaur page again. Mm-mm-mm. There's something there.
There should be a comeback to this in a certain amount of time to see after everyone's kind of had a moment
when everybody's had a minute to go through the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a Reader's Digest.
All right.
Yeah. Like I'm just saying, I want to be Oprah Winfrey, and the rest of you can do what you want to do. Oh, I fucked up my own joke.
Never mind.
God damn it.
I'm gonna send you a copy.
I said
this
Oprah
book.
When I should have said Whoopi. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, he's right. He's an idiot, and he should have said Whoopi.
Well, I guess the only thing I can say besides that is The Moon and Serpent Bumper Book of Magic by Alan Moore and Steve Moore is available wherever fine expressions of a deep love of the occult are sold. Also Amazon. And I do think, like, I don't think anybody here is like, nah, don't buy this book or wait for the movie.
I'd recommend it. I don't think anyone would tell you not to.
My copy was like $40. I still think it was worth it. $40 is a lot to drop on a fucking book, and I still feel like I got my money.
It's really not, because I've bought plenty of books that were in that price range that were not nearly as aesthetically pleasing.
You're an idiot.
I have a copy of Outside the Circles of Time by Kenneth Grant that I paid $315 for. That's also a first.
And
issue.
Then I gave you a PDF.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
And I can't read.
Take a wild guess how much I spent on Znoost Is Knees, the memoir of C.F. Russell.
$400.
Keep going. What? Keep going. 800?
More than 800.
Keep going.
Fuck you.
Keep going.
$2,000.
$1,000.
Ding, ding, ding. Get that man a pony.
Oh, my God.
You want to know what the sad thing is?
What?
It's only volumes 1 through 3. It doesn't
you could
have
bought a
volume.
Pony with that.
Oh, I could have bought
a pony. Wow, dude. Way to get scammed.
Last question before we go. Kennedy, I got this bridge in New York. Do you want to buy
it? How much? Is it less than 1,000? Because I'll trade you a book.
I got to lease a book out of it.
All right, everyone. Thank you. Now we will get back to the rest of the podcast already in progress.
But no, you just said you were going to do this as a standalone.
I lied.
Well, wasn't that something? What? We just stood here in silence for 30 seconds.
This is normally where we would do a How Goes the Work segment, but the work has been the Moore book and the show and our book. So that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah. The book is coming. Mostly right now it's Kennedy sending me like a whole, like two books worth of text and being like, all right, how do I cut this down? And I
it's
say,
me sending
stop. I say,
scrawled
stop
on notebook pages that are just me writing over and over again. It lives under the sink and calling it a book.
No. You know, one thought I had before we broke to take him to the round table is I think maybe for the two of us, this particularly resonates because in a weird way, it's the culmination of two magical bros, like, and their magical bromance. You know, these two probably shared more ideas about magic with each other than anybody else, you know?
Right. And this is the last thing that the two of them got to put out together.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly, Alan had to carry on for 10 years after his dear friend passed just to get it done. But you know, knock on wood, neither one of us have to deal with something like that because it's going to be really hard trying to do an episode without you because I'm going to sit there waiting for you to introduce me. I'm like, what's my goofy name this week? But it's really good. I think in that aspect, it's really good that this came out. And maybe it's part of why it resonates with me so much.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I too have a homie.
I too have a friend that I do stuff I care about with.
I do all my magic with, yeah.
Well, with that, though.
This has been Chaos Magic News.
The culmination of a dude bro magic friendship.
As always, if you too would like to just have a good time with your magical bro, you could start by showing him chaosmagicnews.com, where you'll find links to the pod, links to our interview series, the occasional article, possibly some reviews and excerpts of this forthcoming book.
Ooh.
You're going to love it. It's going to challenge everything that you already disagreed with. And you're going to be like, I believe everything that man said because it's what I wanted to believe. Or maybe you'll hate it and you'll be like, these guys don't know what they're talking about. But we always say that we're going to try to do more as far as the writing, but like it comes when it comes. But this book is a good excuse to just put some stuff up there.
Definitely.
And if you don't like reading and you don't like podcasts that you listen to, you could also find some memes that'll make you go, I also have a cat. And you'll find them on Instagram, Facebook. I'm not even going to lie and say that we're on Twitter anymore. Like, it's there, but you know.
Twitter is not fun anymore.
We're also on Threads and Blue Sky, and I yell things into a hole in the ground if we're talking about stuff no one notices. But if all of that hasn't enticed you either, we've got a Discord where you can, and now this is where the magic bromance comes in, right? You can join the Discord and we will become your new friends. We're actually very easygoing, and if you tell us that you heard it from the pod, we'll pretty much die for you. And if the only way that our loyalty could get any higher is if you said, I am also on your Patreon, because for $5 a month, that means you give us $5. You get access to our Patreon bonus content. Right now, we're about halfway through the occult iceberg.
And we're a little bit more, a little bit less.
Yeah, and we're going to have more stuff like that coming. I'm already looking at some ideas of maybe staggering, like do the iceberg and then something else, and then the iceberg again and then something else. But, man, I think that's about it.
No, there is one more thing.
Oh, what's that?
Because if you are a member of that Patreon that we just referenced, you get your name read at the end of every episode. It's the best part of the episode.
Right here.
Right now. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Local. Thank you, Seos. Thank you, Pope Loki Sater the 23rd, LLC. Thank you, Andrea WK. Thank you, Obsplick. Thank you, Coco. Thank you, Alexander. Thank you, Acolyte One of the Ice Magic Meditation Society. Thank you, Curse T. Thank you, Fyodor Krasny. Thank you, Venus Christ. Thank you, Tent Athena. Thank you, Bearded Vegan. Thank you, Tramov. Thank you, Tangy Darlin. Thank you, DD Destruction. Thank you, Toziel Obscurus. Thank you, Lavender Ghost. Thank you, Tommy Kelly. Thank you, Double Deered. Thank you, Equinox Painter. And thank you, Jaybird.
You are all lovely people. You are justified and ancient.
You are the best thing about this show, especially because you make the best jokes.
All right. And with all of that said, Girth Ennis, would you like the last word?
Oh, la la la. Love underwill. Simple as.
All right, everyone. We will see you next time.
Bye bye.
I would have thought he would have had more in him.
And with that, we're going to end this segment.
And that's Chaos Magic News.